to Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Although studies show that children of divorce are at higher risk to develop physical, psychological, and social problems, there is hope. Children with divorced parents tend to suffer from stomach aches, headaches, higher rates of anxiety, and lower self-esteem than their peers. And as adults, they are also more likely to go through their own divorce. But according to today's guest, Joanne Pedro Carroll, PhD, renowned psychologist and founder of the award-winning Children of Divorce Intervention Program, these detrimental effects are not inevitable. Parents have the power to protect their children and prevent the negative legacy of divorce. Putting Children First, her wonderful book, Parenting Strategies for Helping Children Thrive Through Divorce, Dr. Pedro Carroll shows parents a way and offers them a path to hope and healing during this difficult time. Joanne Pedro Carroll, PhD, is a clinical psychologist, researcher, author, consultant, and lecturer. She held faculty positions in psychology and clinical psychiatry at the University of Rochester for more than 25 years and served in several leadership roles as a Children's Institute in Rochester, New York. Dr. Pedro Carroll founded and directed the Children of Divorce Intervention Program, and her work has earned numerous awards, including the American Psychological Association's Award for Distinguished Contributions to Public Service. She has been married for 30 years and is a mother of 7 children and stepchildren. Wow, that's awesome. Joanne, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm delighted to be with you today.
I'm so happy to have you on the show, Joanne. Your book was so wonderful, and I know people going through divorce, and I'm definitely recommending it. You need the support, the guidance. You lay everything out so wonderfully. And in the introduction, you write about 8-year-old Jessica, and you say that her experience is very typical. Can you talk about her a little bit?
Yes. You know, Jessica is the symbol of so many children who, first of all, hear the news that the two people they love most in the world are not going to be in the same home with them anymore. And certainly that news can come as a huge shock for them, and certainly an unwanted shock. And so for young children, it can be especially hard for them because they don't always have the ability to sort out all the feelings they're having, understand all the complications that can go along with the ending of a marriage. And for too many children, they begin to internalize a worry that their parents' divorce may mean their divorce. I've heard so many children refer to it as my divorce, particularly in the support groups that I do. And one of the messages in this book is to really help parents understand what children like Jessica are experiencing. That if their divorce can be an end to conflict, it can create a harmonious, stable life for children afterwards, then it can really be all the possibilities for new beginnings and healthy relationships. But if, like Jessica, it results in more conflict and strained relationships between parents and their children, it only compounds their losses. And I think you may be referring to Jessica's drawing that she did and talked about. She drew the face miserable with the trail of tears on it in a session with me. And when I asked her what she was feeling so miserable about, she said, well, ever since the divorce, all the good stuff has gone away.
Oh, my God.
Good stuff, I asked. And she said, yeah, the good stuff, like how they used to snuggle me at night. Now they seem so mad, and they're on the phone talking about all the bad things that are happening. So Jessica urgently needed her parents back in her life and not have it be an added loss for her.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is that that's something parents have control over, and that's what this book is really about. It's an empowering message for parents about all the things they can do, not only to help their children survive their divorce, but to really foster their resilience and help them thrive.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of things, and some of those you write about have to do with protective responses that should be used when asking children about their feelings. And if you can talk about that, or actually,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead. I'll edit this out. Let me re-ask that question.
Okay.
What are some protective responses children use? That was it. About 90% or so. What are some protective responses children use when asked about their feelings?
Oh, you know, that's such a great question, Lisa, because, you know, in many ways, I think we have to learn to understand children's, the language that the children speak. And sometimes a question like even, are you going to get married again? Maybe, you know, on the surface, it's a pretty direct question. But underneath that for children is often their fears, their worries that if a parent does become involved in a new relationship, that they, I describe it as they have a fear of replacement. And I heard many children in some of the groups that I've done talk about how they may hate dad's new girlfriend or his new wife or mom's new boyfriend and how mean and ugly and nasty they are. And, you know, I'm a step parent myself, so I was pretty curious about, is this how they really feel? And I said to them, you know, how is it that you have all these, all your moms and dads have chosen these partners who really aren't so nice? And sometimes when you feel that angry, you have some other feelings going on. And one brave 10-year-old boy who was pretty misty-eyed when he said it said, yeah, I'm afraid Dad might love her more now than he loves me.
Mm.
Or I'm afraid Mom loves her new partner more than me. And they seem so happy when they're with their new partner. And throwing up their children up in the air like they used to do with me. So often there is that fear of replacement, that they're going to lose a parent's special place.
Yeah,
lose,
you know,
their special place in their parent's heart.
Yeah, you know, another big fear, and this one I've heard about for years, is the child internalizing it and thinking that somehow it's their fault. And you talk about guilt in the book, and if you can touch on that.
Oh, absolutely. With young children in particular, you know, they have their own way of seeing the world, and it's pretty focused on them. So they can often think that, as I've heard many, many children say, well, I do think it was my fault. I used to wet the bed, and then they'd fight about who was going to get up with me, or I heard my name come up over and over again. I think I was the cause of all the trouble. And when children have that fear, it's often really hard for them to let their parents know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often a fear and a worry that they keep inside to their own detriment.
Yes. Yeah, it's so tough. And that's why, again, your book, it's so important because there's so many different things they're going to go through. And speaking of different things, you have some broad guidelines for preparing children for changes, if you can touch on some of those.
Oh, it's so important that children be prepared for all the changes that are going to come their way after a separation. And there's plenty of research that shows that with young children especially, parents don't think that young children are as affected. So sometimes they're not given much information at all about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which can be terrifying for children because I'm talking about preschool children in particular, 3, 4, 5, even 6-year-olds can begin to think that if the marital bond could end, if mom and dad could stop loving each other, maybe they'll stop loving them. And it ties into their fears of abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extremely important to prepare children, preferably if both parents can sit down and talk with them together, as long as it's safe to do so and there's not tremendous conflict going on. But to prepare children in age-appropriate ways, by telling them about what will change in their lives, but also what will stay the same, reassuring them that parents are going to live in different houses, but mom will always be your mom. Dad will always be your dad. You'll still see both of them. You'll be going to the same school if that's true. Reassuring them about the things that will never change, especially the kind of love parents have for their children, and really reminding them that the kind of love we have for you is the kind that never ends and will never stop.
Yeah, and that touches on, in the book you talk about emotionally intelligent parenting practices. And I think what you were just talking about, being open, and I think focusing on what won't change while you're talking about what will change is really great.
Well, you know, we all need to know. You know, it's one of the most anxious feelings in the world when we don't know what's going to happen to us.
That's true.
So for children to have that stability, to know that a lot of things in my life are going to continue the way they are. There are going to be big changes. But one of the most important things that's not going to change is I'm still going to have two parents who love and care for me. Such an important message to give in words, but then, of course, to back it up in behaviors, too.
Yeah, that is so true. And, you know, you write in the book that there's this whole idea of resiliency, and you write, quote, how often we hear people say they're young and resilient, they'll get over it. The belief that resilience is an intrinsic trait that all children have is widely but mistakenly held. If you can expand on that.
Yes. You know, I'm so glad you asked that, Lisa, because that is a word that gets bandied about a lot, especially when it comes to children. And one of the things we know is that resilience isn't just a magic bullet. You know, it's not like some magic wand that because children are young, they're automatically going to be immune to the stress that's going on around them. Resiliency happens in children when responsible adults take action to provide children with structure and stability. Help them to what I call, by using the language of love and limits in their parenting, that those two pillars of parenting. One is that warmth and nurturing and emotional support, listening to children's feelings. But equally important is, of course, setting limits for children, having the kind of structure and routines and reasonable discipline. All of that helps children to learn their own self-control and ways of managing their emotions.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I mean, there's so many emotions going on, and that's something you talk about in the beginning of the book, is that children don't always say what they mean, and that it's hard, you know, how do you get them to express their deepest emotions?
Right. I think that's even hard for us as adults.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, that's true.
Especially when there are so many different emotions going on. You know, it's not just one feeling, but a whole mixture. And even for children going back and forth between their parents' homes, they're probably filled with so many mixed emotions. You know, they want to be with dad, but when it's time to leave, it might be hard to say goodbye, and then they're happy to see mom, but they're also sad because they're missing dad. They may feel a mixture of anger or frustration about all the changes going on. As you mentioned, they may feel some guilt and a sense of responsibility. And one of the things that we know helps children so much, and there's some great brain research that really supports this, is helping them develop their emotional vocabulary, helping them put their feelings into words, to be able to, you know, give voice to all the things they're feeling. And it's very clear that when children can put their feelings into words more, they're less likely to internalize worries and anxiety that can get translated into headaches, stomach aches. They're less likely to act out with disruptive behavior. You know, if they can say, I'm frustrated or I'm angry.
Yeah.
So, and also, when children can put their feelings into words, this is true for adults also, it actually changes the activity in the brain.
Really?
To help calm. It actually calms the amygdala, that part of the brain that keeps anxiety and anger all fired up. and moves the activity more to the frontal cortex, where we can have more rational thought and better problem solving. So there are so many reasons to help children be able to put their feelings into words and to listen carefully to what children are feeling.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of anger, unfortunately, you often have parents, you know, they're getting, couples getting divorced, and they're not really containing their, not containing their anger, that's not the right word, but I guess, you know, displaying it appropriately, perhaps, you know what I'm trying to say? And
yes.
It sounds like they need some work with their amygdalas as well.
Well, you know, isn't it, it's such a tough challenge for parents, because, of course, anger is a part of ending a relationship. You know, conflict is inevitable in a separation and a divorce. And I'm not saying anger is bad either.
No, of course not.
Yeah, sure, it's a normal response to loss in many ways. But the key is, how does it get handled? And when children are involved, it's so important that parents are containing their conflict so that children are not getting caught in the middle of it, which can happen so often. And in fact, when parents can demonstrate to their children that they're handling anger and conflict in productive ways, you know, it's actually a really important role model for children of, okay, I am really mad, but
yes,
I'm not going to, as I often say in our groups with children that I do, you know, you can say what you mean without being mean. You can say, I'm so angry, I'm furious, I'm frustrated, but
yeah,
not allow
advice.
It to become something that becomes toxic.
Yeah. Oh, I'm always telling my daughter, you got to feel your feelings. I think that is so important. And, you know, there's so much in your book that we're not going to be able to get to, which is why I want to encourage everyone to go out and get this. You talk about setting limits and before, during, after divorce, and advice from children to parents, and new relationships, dating and remarriage, and, you know, the influence, what factors influence the success of joint custody. And actually, there was one more thing I'd love for you to touch on. If you can tell us about Mark and Lisa and how they went from conflict to cooperation.
Well, Mark and Lisa represent, you know, there is a chapter on success stories, too, and there are so many couples that I've worked with who've come through this. Not that it's easy. I really don't want to suggest that it was a piece of cake. But that when couples can truly make their children's needs a top priority and take the long view and realize that, okay, right now, I may be feeling betrayed because my partner had an affair. I'm furious. I'm devastated. I'm sad. But thinking kind of long-term about, how do you want your children to be 5, 10 years from now? Do you want them to think that they can't invite both of their parents to their wedding because there'll be so much conflict? Or do you want them to think, you know, my parents did get a divorce, but they handled it pretty well, and I was able to go on and have a healthy relationship with both of them.
That's great.
So many benefits that could come from people like Mark and Lisa being able to work through their conflict and taking developing a more business-like relationship, kind of switching gears from being former lovers, spouses, to really focusing on having a more respectful, business-like relationship with the, you know, important process of raising their precious children. And one thing I really want to emphasize is, I hope I give this message of hope and healing in the book, that it's never too late to have healthy relationships.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, ultimately, you know, what we all want and need is to love and be loved. So even if it's been a few years since a divorce, there are always opportunities to strengthen relationships with children, and that's a huge predictive factor for how they'll do over time. Quality parenting, healthy relationships with children, containing conflict, those are very powerful factors that shape children's adjustment long-term into adulthood.
Wow. You know, Joanne, I wanted to ask you about how you started the Children of Divorce International Intervention Program. If you can just tell us briefly about that.
Oh, it's a great story. It was hard because I started it in the early 1980s as part of my doctoral dissertation in clinical psychology. And I had worked in schools for a few years, and I noticed that a number of the children who were referred to me individually were all struggling with similar things, all really having a hard time with the changes in their families. Divorce rates were really skyrocketing at that point. And yet there weren't any programs like that in the country, or very few if there were any. And I'll never forget one day I had had a few rejections from schools and had been told, you know, I just don't think this program will work. I don't think parents will want their kids talking about something so personal. And I came home and our beloved son, Scott, my stepson, was sitting there reading a book, and I said, you know, Scott, I think I should just give up on this idea to start this program for kids. Seems like nobody wants it. I'm kind of, you know, banging my head against the wall, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to work. Maybe I should just go do some study in a lab someplace. And Scott looked up, very, very sincere, and he said, you know, Joe, he was about 14 at the time, and he said, you know, Joanne, I really think you ought to keep trying. I sure wish there had been something like that for me when I was going through my parents' divorce. So Scott was really my inspiration to keep at it, and he was right. You know, he was like the voice of so many children saying, okay, so it's hard. You find problem solve, find some other ways. And that's what I did. And so the program started locally in Rochester, New York, in about five schools, and now it's in settings throughout the world.
Oh, my goodness. That's wonderful.
Nice to know that children are getting support and learning skills to help them cope with all the changes they face.
Well, Joanne, I want to thank you again. Putting Children First, Proven Parenting Strategies for Helping Children Thrive Through Divorce is so fantastic. And how can people learn more about you and your wonderful work?
Oh, on my website, it's www.pedro-carroll.com.
Oh, terrific. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a terrific day. Have a great week as well. Take care. Bye-bye.